And welcome to the Dice and Screaming Podcast. Well, okay. That's a new one.
Yeah. So. That's what you get from the gaming podcast that totally licks the brightly colored toad it found in the jungle.
Did not.
That's what you say now.
I'm in the spirit world. I don't know what you're talking about. Me and this dragon are sitting here having a conversation.
Yeah, his name is Carlos Castaneda.
He's a businessman from Ecuador. All right, so yeah, hey, it's the Dice and Screaming Podcast. I'm Randy.
I am Mike.
And together we form the literary two-headed Etten of gaming podcasts. Yeah, that's us. We're back, baby. And it's the end of the year, so we let the Astrogalomancer have a vacation.
Yeah.
So we're just going to pull the curtain back on this one and just say our next episode before we jump into this one.
Very intentionally, like sans Astrogalomancer. We're doing our year-end retrospective, which has become something of a common event for us, to look back at the year that has gone by. So that's next week's podcast. We're going to revisit any number of topics and events, both in the podcast over the last year, in the gaming world over the past year, and in our lives over the past year. So, yeah, it is what it is. And, man, it's the silly season, so.
Well, also, it's a precursor to this episode, because what really happened, what we're talking about today, which is the end of the OGL, not the end of the OSR. We accidentally said that at the end.
Yeah, that's...
kind of slipped out, but it's the end of the OGL is what we're talking about today, and yeah, that really affected for last year. So what we don't cover here, we'll cover in our next episode, which will be our first episode of the year. So this is our last episode officially of the season, which it is silly season. Well, it's the holiday season, and we hope that you and yours have a great one. And
well, we'll squeeze in this next podcast before the end of the year. Or are we taking a week off?
We'll just have the next podcast will be our end of year. So yeah, looking at the calendar, yeah, you're right. We'll have that one as the end of the year, and then we'll have a brand new episode, brand spanking new for the new year, and try to start it off right rather than where we started off at this time last year. That's the whole thing. So anyway. Yeah, a lot to cover. The news, pretty much the same. It's all wizards all the time. No, it's bumbling and stumbling around in the dark. And if the episode of this year's Wizards of the Coast behavior could be summarized, that would be the politest way I would call it. I have another term for it, but it's not radio friendly, as I say. So.
Yeah, let's highlight the Hasbro connection here. I mean, you know, much of this is coming from up on high. The consistent experience we've had, even I, who have tried very hard to be as reasonable and as fair and as understanding as I can be, because there's a corporate mentality in place that I understand. There are requirements on people that are not the kind of requirements the rest of us face. I get that. I am not just being harsh for the sake of being harsh, but even I have like just reached that point of frustration. Like I'm looking at people who seem absolutely determined in the face of having already done very serious economic harm to their own company. They're just really doubling down on this. Like there's no take backs here. They're just like, okay, we could have been wrong. None of that. Just 100%. No, we've got to keep with this. If we just keep being awesome as I know we are, someday the rest of the world will see how awesome we really are. No, no.
So yeah, we got a lot to cover, folks. So let's get started. This is the end of the OGL as we know it, and why...
Rip the Band-Aid off.
How did we get here? Why are we here, and where is it going? Well, we're going to attempt to answer those questions and more. And to start with how we got here, I mean, a lot of folks know this, but there was a study done last year about the global tabletop role-playing game market. And this was a study that goes all the way from forecast to 2024 to 2031. And they basically did 100 companies, including some luminaries like, of course, you would expect Paizo and Green Ronin and a few of the other bigger players, but also names like Frog God Games,
Catalyst, Chaosium, Palladium. Yep. Like, really, they did a pretty comprehensive study.
And they found out that the market size was valued at a U.S. dollar amount of $1,539 million. So basically, in 2022, that was your sizable share of the TTRPG market. Now, it's forecasted to grow to about $3 billion in 2028.
Now, mind you, that is the entirety of the expected value of the whole games market. Okay, all of these niche industries and all of their products, not just TTRPGs, but the anticipated value of that entire
their
niche
IPs,
industry. It's around $3 billion, which is nothing to scoff at.
And, you know, that also includes Critical Role.
Yeah,
it's not just, you know, it's the idea that the IPs of these brands have value in their identity and their worth.
And that's, they have shown growth consistently overall. Not every single individual has shown this much growth, but as a whole, the industry itself, the entire industry and all the players in it, have shown consistent growth. So it's a reasonable thing to project that if you make a conservative estimate on that growth per year, you can say that by somewhere around, 2031, you'd be staring at like $3 billion.
No, 2028.
Oh, 2028. Okay.
Yeah, by 2031, they don't. That's just going out to 2031. It will probably be almost $5
billion. Oh,
at the current models of growth. Now that can.
Yeah, that can change.
The farther out it goes, the less durable this forecast.
Yeah. In the short term, you know, it's mostly a good news for the gaming atmosphere overall.
Yeah. And so they're talking about this, that what the big things was is the relative freedom of play appeals to players and is expected to boost the market growth. That was one of the things, as opposed to video games where the behavior of characters is fixed or limited by choices. The market of growth is seen as this is the major factor in determining these numbers is that how players interact with a game master and have freedom of choices in their characters and their choices and responses is seen as the key factor in determining the value of TTRPGs. So, with that in mind, we are going to talk a little bit about this, but not too much. So you may remember Alta Fox.
Yeah.
The investment group.
Right smack dab in the center of the year, we had a coup attempt that happened inside the shareholders for Wizards of the Coast / Hasbro. And the objective here was to excise Wizards of the Coast from Hasbro, ultimately. It was an attempt to move sympathetic people onto the board who had an interest in preserving Wizards of the Coast from the ravages done to it by Hasbro. And it failed, tragically.
But
you got to watch out with these things because, I mean, it was pretty much sharks from Wall Street in every direction.
So, right. That's with hindsight, we start to see with some clarity what they were alarmed about. But at the time, everything was buzzing and humming along just as it should. There was no big red flags. There was, of course, always the fact that you're dealing with Hasbro running the show and Wizards of the Coast kind of having to follow the lead. But at this point, ever since Hasbro took over Wizards of the Coast, it seemed to be pretty much that Hasbro had an interest, but were fairly hands-off. But some things have been happening. The Dominaria.
Dominaria Remastered?
Yeah, Dominaria Remastered, forgive me.
And Dominaria, you know, they've returned to those. And there have been further developments.
That was a $4,000 box set that you couldn't really use.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure on that one. because, like,
look. Well, yeah, that's it was like about $4,000
you got. It was the specialty materials that were also offered literally outside of, like, the traditional set releases. The special Uber Collector's Ultimate Edition crap that basically this is the stuff that, like, only people who made their money in Silicon Valley in the 90s and can afford to spend $4,000 or $5,000 on a single item as a, like, lighthearted luxury. Uh-huh. Yeah, this is the Cadillac stuff that, honestly, the rest of the gaming community cannot afford and is never going to even see. And the sales, predictably enough, were not good.
Well, right. But
now they've recovered from that because they've gone back to focusing on, like, hey, how about if we just make really good sets of cards that are fun to play and then sell those? As it turns out, that's like a miracle cure-all. That, oh, gosh. Who would have thought that the thing that literally caused them to become incredibly wealthy would be a thing that would cause them to become incredibly wealthy? Wow.
Well, yeah, but unthinkable. We get back on the road here. We're talking about the Alta Fox. At first, they seem to want to try to take control of Wizards of the Coast in a scheme at the boardroom, and everybody kind of thought, oh, wait, this is just some, you know, bigwig Wall Street snarky shark out there to make cut himself a big deal and try to take away the control of Wizards of the Coast from Hasbro. But it turned out that maybe that was a good choice after all. But we also had the increase of paper products and the diminishment of petroleum reserves that are used primarily for printing inks and other dyes. Those are starting to have to go up as the reserves diminish. In addition to that, the cost of transportation from primarily overseas printing hubs and areas, they have shrank down their factories and production facilities. So time at press is at a premium now. So that also rises the cost up. So there's a rising wave of costs throughout the printing industry, which is primarily the TTRPG and collectible card gaming market, which we're not really touching much here, but because you're having a conversation about Wizards of the Coast, you got to talk about Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
And so these are putting enormous pressures on Wizards at a time where they're already having, coming out of post-COVID, where they have a product schedule that's been backed up for 2-3 years now, and they're trying to catch up to their air idea, and they've been flooding to their ideal marketing.
I wouldn't even say their product schedule is offline here, except that, you know, like post-COVID, I mean, yeah, it may have delayed plans somewhat, but...
Well, they've been putting out more and more material in a very fast, rapid pace that people haven't been able to really get used to one and get it collected before another one is offered.
Oh, with regard to Magic.
Right.
Yes, okay. In the immediate post-COVID rush... they really just, people were crying out during COVID for leisure products, and they ramped up the pace. They pushed out as much as possible. And honestly, they tapped the market out. Now, things have shown improvement. Okay, they've returned to their regular, right. we now return you to our regularly scheduled.
But yes, this on top of that has pushed Wizards into a tighter production phase, and they have a lot of stuff they've been deluging the market with, flooding the market with, to say it better, more betters. I have good words, the better words. They are gooder. They've been flooding the market with a lot of Magic product, and that's also helped push down Magic. And for the first time, D&D started to rise up to the very high levels of product, and it was looking very promising.
Yeah, but it's profitability. It's something of an optical illusion, which is if you depress the current value of Magic sufficiently, D&D becomes your strong performer by comparison. Not because D&D is poised to leap forward into the future, consuming 90% of the market. No, it's just that you handled Magic so badly that you actually made it less valuable.
Well,
so,
all right. Well,
I want to take some of the credit away there from them. You know, it's not that D&D was poised to do more awesome than ever, which in theory,
well, for the first time it did, and what other factors contributed to it? It was a time to make note of it. Critical Role, other things have been raising eyebrows and beating expectations
for like
of
six,
what it
7 years. Yeah. I mean, they have been beating the drum and drawing new players in and bringing fans to the table. And they've been spreading the gospel, which to my way of thinking is that they have been doing the legwork. Like they should not be, they shouldn't even be paying Wizards of the Coast anything. Mm. Okay. WOTC would be like, we've never had such a good ad marketing team. We should actually, like, if we were paying Madison Avenue to do what you do, we would be out $1.5 million a year.
Well, let's
not getting residuals.
But
that's,
we're
the,
talking about
that's the testimony we're looking at here, that we're talking about the mindset at Wizards of the Coast in Hasbro is the sullen resentment of everything that you have been given and blessed with. Like that seething hatred and contempt for everyone else bringing about your success for you, like all of the effort made by other people out of passion for the project, and all we have left are the bean counters go, well, I'm not getting the largest slice of this pie, or at least not the slice that I think I should get. This would be worth trillions if we just did this right.
Well,
wow. The arrogance, the narcissistic, like psychopathic nature of that is pathetic. It's offensive.
It goes to the point that Critical Role really didn't start to spring out ahead until the last 4 years. However, that had been a factor. And like you said, Wizards should have been paying Critical Role from the get-go. But nobody at Wizards really seems to be paying attention to anything. And also, during this time, we'll have to talk about Baldur's Gate 3. But I just want to put a pin in there that we're going to be coming to that pretty soon. So if you're already like, hey, Baldur's Gate was made, a deal was made about 6 years prior to today. Yeah, this is where this starts in. So yeah, D&D was looking, actually, I'm going to counter you on that they were looking to have a groundswell of profitability. But there's a lot of missed opportunities in that. And again, we're going to get to that. But the movie was coming out.
Yeah.
For the very first time, it looked like D&D was going to be able to carry forth its own weight in the company. But we already talked about the rise of printing and the production costs and shipping. That was also menacing. And we, at Azalta Fox, the investor group, they failed in their attempt to kind of try to free Wizards of the Coast away from Hasbro's marketing strategy, which we finally get to see, because early on in the later half of the third quarter, I don't know if that's too obscure. Yeah, in the end of 2022, we'll just say that. Cynthia Williams said that D&D was under-monetized in a board meeting. And, you know, that would go back to that $1.5 billion market. And Wizards had a predominant share of that. There's, and the other companies, whether they were the smallest ones like Evil Hat Press.
I mean, they were like what Wizards constituted something like 900 million of that current estimate of 1.5 plus billion. Okay, that is like 9/15 or 9/16 of the entire market.
Yeah.
They're enjoying a very robust position already.
But they say
I don't disagree with the term undermonetized, which we may have mentioned during some of the early discussions earlier this year about that choice of terms by Cynthia Williams. I don't disagree in a more realistic sense that undermonetization simply means that they had not yet expanded into the multiple genres and made the fullest possible use of their intellectual property to draw fans and to win profit.
Only fans.
They had not done as much as could clearly be done yet. And I agree with that in sentiment. However, as it turns out, what they perceive as under monetization, their way of acting on that is to let us strike punitively to have total control of the IP and all words, concepts, notions, thoughts, or experiences related to it, which is the stupidest possible take any human being could have made. It just, there is no dumber anyone could have gotten. This was, This was an Abbott and Costello Three Stooges level event, or like the Keystone Cops just running around whacking each other with sticks and jumping into a, like 200 people squeezed into a clown car. And wow.
Yeah, but let's talk about that rather than just narrate it. So the actual point was, as of course many of you know, is they announced that they were going to come up with a new edition and change the OGL to a new license, and you're all going to love it. Pay up, suckers. We're looking at you, Critical Role and Paizo. They had these...
Have you made any real money at all? Oh, we are planning to take that. And if you didn't make all that much money, well, we're still going to want some of that, too.
Now, they knew...
With an option to take the rest later if you ever strike it big.
Yeah, you got to turn over all your financial doings and investiture notes to us. You've got to reveal your marketing strategies.
Yeah.
To us, a level of control that is completely beyond the pale of anything of a normal contract of licensees.
Yeah, this, I feel like, you know, I mean, did they get Rudy Giuliani to pen this for him? Did they hire him as an outside consultant? Because this is some of the dumbest crap anybody has ever seen.
So they came out with that, and they'd already notified several of their bigger clients. Let's see, was Drive-Thru RPG. There was another one, I can't remember off that. But the one that was most important was D&D Beyond. They'd already notified them, and they got the sale of D&D Beyond at a pretty good price, about $150 million, something around that area. And they acquired D&D Beyond, which they should have done from the get-go, because as I understand it, D&D Beyond did offer them to be bought out, but Wizards like, nah, you do it.
Which seems to have been like, this is something of a recurring theme, you know, like Larian, you do it, D&D Beyond, you do it, and they keep handing, also E1 Entertainment, you do it, and then how come we didn't make as much money? You tanked every relationship you had with every entity that could have made it possible for you to expand into these other markets.
Right.
You killed every single one of them like a serial killer. This is like watching Dahmer just devour person after person. Go, oh, I shouldn't have eaten Chinese. I'm still hungry. And they're just looking for the next target.
It's a joke, folks.
Yeah, just kidding.
Just kidding.
It's a tragic farce. Okay, the conduct has been inexplicable.
Right, they licensed it out to these other places, and then they want to reacquire them back at greater cost than it would have taken them when it first started, or after paying an immense amount of money, selling it for a loss, which they did for E1 Entertainment. They got E1 Entertainment for like almost $4 billion they had to buy it from, and that was to develop their products, not just D&D, but also Transformers, G.I. Joe, My Little Pony, and everything else that they the IPs that they have, rather than having to sell it out to studios. And then they ended up selling it right before the release of the D&D movie for $500 million to Lionsgate Studios. I mean, just such waste. So, yeah, that's why they're in the position they are. And they wanted to do this with D&D. And, you know, here the movie's coming out. The launch of Baldur's Gate 3 is imminent, and Wizards of the Coast is now attacking their what they perceive as foes or competitors in the market, like Critical Role. Like, hey, you guys make a lot of money. You know, either pay us up, pay up now, or pay up later, chump. If you go now with this new deal, what we got, it's only 20%. But if you know you decide to wait till later, then you're gonna have to pay 25%. I mean, what is this, a shakedown? Come on, you talk about Rudy Giuliani. I'm talking about Don Gotti. You know?
And Vinny the Shank is visiting for his monthly contribution to the Widows and Orphans Fund. Or else. Unless you want to be a widow or an orphan.
You got a nice game company. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. You know,
they went fire, you know, fires. Get some proper insurance, paid to the right people. Yeah, the shakedown did not work out like they hoped.
So they then.
I do want to say one thing though, is that in the underestimation category, there are a great many people who make their assessment on the value of a film release based on the standards we used in the 1970s, 1980s, and 1990s. Okay, that like your opening box office
weekend. You mean anything like more than 20 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah.
Before the internet.
Your box office weekend was the thing that really mattered, because there was not going to be a vast difference between your box office sales and your final sales. Now, the world has radically changed in the last 40 years. And unlike some people on the internet who have been rattling around since like the late 80s, early 90s, like from the dawn of the bulletin board, furiously pounding away at the keyboard with their flipper hands, some of us have paid attention to the actual modernity involved here, the things that have radically changed, which is the nature of distribution and revenue with films. So a movie where somebody spends $100 million, if it only makes $100 million during the box office week, that everybody now of that older ilk goes, total failure. Oh, what a dud. No. No. Because it is the aftermarket that really decides the profitability of a film.
Right.
And in the case of D&D, the residuals have proven to be considerable. It has moved from the category of box office dud to, oh, wow, that actually is continuing to draw a substantive amount of revenue. That's true of a great many movies, okay? That is not just unique to D&D. I'm not mentioning it just because of that. But it's the core point that the numbers that people are quoting you are oftentimes absolutely irrelevant. They have nothing to do with the genuine. This is not Ishtar with Dustin Hoffman or, you know, what have you back in the day, or Warren Beatty back in the day, where, wow, this is the worst performance of a movie ever, and they're never going to see any money back on this. That case was true. In this environment, you have to wait a year before you can pass a judgment like that. It's just the way the market works now, and it's time to like come off our silly high horses and admit that. You know, no more of this old man, get off my lawn. When's Matlock? Where's my pants? Okay, like, you take your meds. You're not qualified for this conversation because we're not even sure you know where you are. So having gotten that out of the way, Wizards, they did not make the best strategic use of these things. We haven't hit Larian yet. We're getting to that one.
Well, but we'll have to wait until we're...
Yeah, we got to hit the break.
All right. Well, I guess we'll pull the plug on it right now. So stick around and we'll be back with more OGL goodness. Talk to you in a minute. All right. And we're back. So, hey, folks. What we were talking about right before the break and kind of run out of a little room. So thanks for Mike for pulling the plug on that. But yeah,
I wanted him to have enough time in this segment to make his point properly. Oh, well, we were down to like our last minute plus.
You were talking about the movies, and I just said, we want to bring that up, so that's some foreshadowing for a later episode. But we do want to talk about that, and I thought it's important enough, but I didn't want quite that at that point, so we wanted to talk about what Wizards of the Coast can do to save themselves from Hasbro, from Alta Fox, and I think that ship has done sailed, unfortunately.
Now, I don't actually think rescue is imminent. I don't foresee
Wizards hit a bankruptcy. For instance, if Hasbro went under a Chapter 11 bankruptcy and had to be reorganized under the effects of a trustee, and somebody like Alta Fox or another White Knight showed up and offered to buy Wizards of the Coast, I think a trustee or a court-appointed CFO would be more than willing to make that trade. But that's a lot of contrivance.
Incredible money, for, well, frankly, Hasbro's most valuable property.
Right, yeah. The crown jewel could be snatched at that point, but that would require a high-level thief and a lot of contrivances to get you there. So we're not going to touch on that one.
Yeah, and currently, as nearly as we can tell, they appear to be plot-armored and impervious to facts, reason, logic, data, anything. Just It's all going to come together when the BTT comes out. We're just,
yeah.
We're facing strong market headwinds, guys. That's what that is. If we were not prepared for the strong market headwinds, okay. Yeah.
But we talked about that Wizards.
Boy, and I joke about us licking toads out in the jungle. Okay. I feel like there's been a little too much, colorful toad licking over in the boardroom at Hasbro. And I say this as a person whose only virtue is that I am open to the realization that I have been wrong. Okay. I don't say this as a corporate expert. I'm not. Oh. I do, however, in any situation I get into, I have the capacity to look and go, well, that's clearly not working. We're going to have to try a different tack. I don't have the psychotic egotism necessary to go, look, just because I'm buried in poop and on fire doesn't mean that this situation doesn't call for more poop and gasoline. And that seems to be where Hasbro is at. And I am just, exasperated because we're watching a loved one slowly die. This has not been a pleasure for us. This has been a tragic farce, and I'm getting a little weary of it. But we continue now with.
I just want to be able to
blow it up, bro.
Yeah. With toad licking aside, you get mileage out of our tagline for the week.
Thank you.
So, whether it's Hasbro or WotC, at this point, we need to just basically address it. It's Hasbro. And we use Cynthia Williams as primarily the voice because she's the one face that we can link to this monetization. But their plan, as it turns out to be, is to start a new edition and change the OGL. And that went over, and we've covered that in a previous podcast, so you can check that one out.
Several.
Yeah, and it still continues to this day, the fallout from that. But their sales went right down in January. They bottomed out. And I think that their...
that went right down the pooper.
Their D&D Beyond subscriptions also started to decline, and they're still in decline. They have not yet stabilized, because I think what they're seeing right now is an end-of-year subscription, because usually around this time, people like to give gifts, and so a year-round subscription for D&D... Beyond, not an online, excuse me, D&D Beyond. These are when they renew. They do a lot of other things.
And the renewal rate is not quite what they
might have. And so there's still a panic on that, but that's towards the end of this. Where we are, how we got here, we're still trying to get through that part, is basically saying that, look, the OGL, trying to realign that, it's well documented. You know where that went. It went badly. And they still continue to stumble over themselves, from sending Pinkertons to retrieve stolen magic cards, because that was a terrible look, and to the newest round of layoffs in 1,100 people at Magic and Wizards, or D&D design teams, lost their jobs.
Yeah.
And these were the ones who have been headlining this for 2 or 3 years. They've been
trying. Mike Murrells, who frankly is the architect of the, edition that has now dominated the globe and made so much money that, this is the guy who made this possible for them. Along with a lot of the lower level, they're less famous, but a lot of very hardworking people who are the actual content makers, and they have literally displayed total contempt for that. They just canned hosts of them, which strategically tells us that by default, their intention is to coast. Okay, they have what they consider an actionable and finished series of product releases prepared. They don't need these people anymore, in their view. And this is a chance to make great cuts and save money. To them, what they fail to realize is that was the goose that laid the golden egg. Those are the people who make
come out with what
you sell. And now you just are planning to coast for how long? How long do you think it's going to last?
Yeah, this current resurgence of Magic and D&D is not due to just a happenstance. It's a concerted effort, despite the doings of Hasbro, to bring these market forces to bear and these strategies to full blossom, to use an easier to pronounce term, because I don't have the gooder words today. My words are not gooder.
Not ready to use fruition.
Yeah. To fruition, yes, but I'll mumble that up. Anyway, the real problem is that they had opportunities with these folks in place to make good on bringing D&D out of its current state into a higher state. And it didn't require having to do the OGL, because everybody knows whether you need a new edition or not. And in this case, I think 5th edition didn't. There are times when you do need an edition, new edition, that when you do announce an edition, your current stocks and confidence and sales tank, because nobody's going to order a new supplement for a game that's going to be in the cheap bin in another year or two.
Yeah.
So orders are going to go down. It's not a good time when you announce a new edition. But they did this for other reasons, to get D&D Beyond. And this is where it's coming to bite them in the ass. Then we get back to the Baldur's Gate, finally pulling the pin on this one. Baldur's Gate 3 has been in development for...
Oh, goodness. Like, this dates back a while. Like, the initial concept was hitting the table about 6 years ago. But then, of course, lengthy period of development, and thank God it was. But at the time that they penned this, I don't think they foresaw the incredible nature of people's response. They really did not get you, like, oh, we're gonna do a cute little thing like the Baldur's Gate stuff that, like, you know, they had the Baldur's Gate 1 and the Baldur's Gate 2. People like those, right? I don't think they properly surmised how amazing a job Larian was about to do.
Well, yeah, no kidding, because they fumbled up the Mandalorian toy line at Hasbro, then had to play catch up. Now you see a whole bunch of their toys at wholesalers like Ollie's, as well as a lot of D&D games, by the way. You can still pick those up for cheap. Christmas present. You can go get Warriors of Kryn for like $10, and it's like a $100 board game.
Yeah.
That tells you a lot. But anyway.
$100 board game, which, like, I mean, he's basically announcing the nature of the problem right there. Which is, like, you may have gone a little overboard with your expectations. Like, if you can get a $40 box that is a fun board game, you placed it in that sweet spot where it's affordable and fun and gaming related.
But did not sell and clogged up the warehouse.
$100 is, like, you got a warehouse full of these because mom and pop aren't dropping $100 on this.
Well, sorry. Or, you know, gamers who are already struggling a lot of times to not only fulfill their orders or get what they want, but also get what their family and friends want to it. Yeah. So anyway, gift giving aside, the idea was is that they had an opportunity here to market the Baldur's Gate 3 with action figures. Like, who wouldn't want a Minxkin Boo action figure, right? Who wouldn't want some of the titular characters? Like,
go for the eyes, Boo! Go for the eyes!
Who wouldn't have wanted, what's that Guess Yankee lady that the tell me about the other day? I can't remember her name.
Oh my gosh. Lazel.
Yeah, and some of the other characters as premium action figures Hasbro could produce. They didn't do any of that.
Like, why are these not Funkos yet? Okay, because, I mean, I see that being hot. Like, everybody...
Well, Funko is going the way of the dodo on that one because, well, they're the product of their own success. But coming to a landfill near you, Funko collection.
They have Funko'd everything. Like, we're rapidly running out of things that have not
I got a Funko, you know? They've made a Funko of me.
Hey, you know, once or two, you know.
No, I'm just kidding. No one would make a Funko of me. But you can make a Funko of yourself. That's what they did offer. Anyway.
Nobody would, nobody understands a nitro-burning funny car?
No, nobody does. So.
Okay. For you Dead Milkman fans out there, yeah, y'all know what I mean.
All right, but for the fans of D&D in the end of the OGL podcast, we're going to keep on hitting the notes with this one. They had an opportunity, not only with the toy division to capitalize on the Baldur's Gate 3 success, but they also had an opportunity with a model that they used in the past with the Gold Box SSI series, like Warriors of Kryn, Pool of Radiance, Azure Bonds.
Yeah,
they could have linked this in with their current market strategy, but was there any pre-painted Miniatures of the Baldur's Gate characters? Nope.
Yep.
Was there any module tie-in that I know that, yes, this Baldur's Gate 3 technically ties into the Avernus, Return to Avernus adventure?
Yeah.
It kind of coincides with that, but could have just not developed that? Well, yeah, you can't now because you fired the people who've been working with Larian Studios to help develop these storylines and push them forward. I mean,
yeah.
Who could have seen Spelljammer Illithids as the principal villains? Okay, these people did. And they helped Larian Studios develop this. I'm pretty sure Larian had its own ideas. But again, Wizards of the Coast, I mean, Hasbro didn't utilize the type of people that they have in Wizards of the Coast to capitalize on this and make that market growth piggyback off or even coattail with the Baldur's Gate 3 release. And we're not even talking about the movie because we had no adventures in the movie. Now, I know that some people may roll their eyes. Well, the last thing I want to do is run an adventure from the D&D movie. But hear me out. A starter set with some of the characters from there. A tie-in, movie tie-in product with a mini pre-painted miniature concept from WizKids. Or even just a board game. I mean, that whole Silvery Moon murder maze could have just been a board game all on its own. It was quick. Beer and Pretzels went for like $25, like a lot of these indie games, like Ukotoa and some of the others, that just would have been fun to play.
What, not Exploding Kittens?
Well, sure, that's another one, but I can't name everything.
Or Sushi Go, which, like, hey, you know what? Don't diss. Right. Fun as heck. I played. I enjoyed. Although, only problem was I was incredibly hungry. Within like 2-3 hands, I was like, oh my god, I'm starving. I have to get sushi. I think it's the evil plot behind the game. Now, but your point is taken, and I believe it is accurate.
That they may not have known how big Baldur's Gate 3 would, but they still knew it wasn't going to be just a small thing.
Yeah, they're culpable for... Like, no one could have predicted the overwhelming success, but they are culpable for not capitalizing on the assumption that at the time of this thing's release, this is while the iron will be hot. Even if it is not the hottest iron ever, it will still be a hot iron moment, and that is the time for the hammer to strike. We should have these things prepared to launch. We should have these interconnected events underway.
Yeah, Hasbro should have invented, or could have profited from having a toy line from Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, and they made no plans for any of this, and it's almost like they don't belong to a toy and game company.
Yeah.
Which is just mind-boggling to me. I get that they don't understand the gamer market, but, I mean, for the love of God, when you talk about being under-monetized as a property, because there are other properties out there like Star Wars or Star Trek or what have you, Harry Potter, all of these things, all Lord of the Rings. If you want to be monetized that way, then you obviously should have conceived of having that marketing ready.
Merchandising. Merchandising, exactly. That's where I'm going. It's like, notice when we said that it was a $1.5 billion TTRPG industry niche, you could have used mark of the capital from and toy shares from Hasbro to increase profits overall. And that still would have succeeded in monetizing D&D because kids are not going to buy these premium action figures, but adults will. And especially people who have grown up with the Baldur's Gate franchise, having a kickback to Minsk and Boo.
Which I loved.
With a premium action figure.
I loved meeting them in the
game. You know, with the 10 points of articulation and, you know, different hands and, like, sculpt heads. I would have loved that.
Now with a giant miniature space hamster throwing action.
Yeah, but you see where I'm going with this. That they had there was an opportunity here, even from the movie standpoint.
Put a little button in it like the voice. Butt kicking for justice.
What if they would have had, and hear me out for magic, since that D&D set came out, what if they would have had a mini or a expansion for the movie for magic?
Oh, well, I don't know that that will never happen, but they've certainly been covering enough media products lately. I mean,
well, sure. I mean,
there are some that are
Hasbro's just so been covering the Disney releases, and those, well, you know, say what you want about them.
Well, they did
Kids
Ponies the Galloping. Which, like, I was just like, yeah, I will never own a card from that. And a number of other, they did the Doctor Who one, which I sure do like Doctor Who, but I'm not interested in their little side decks that are dedicated to a particular show. I was more interested in the ones that were D&D themed. So that's just me. I'm not, please understand that this is not a diss on anybody who liked, like, oh, I want the Doctor Who deck. Hey, if you're a diehard fan and you want it, you get it.
Look, okay, I support the 40K one, and I understand that one's doing pretty good.
Yeah, it did reasonably well, actually. Yeah, okay. It's also, you know,
I've heard good things about it.
Tracking back upwards, but I did not collect that one either. Right. So these side things, I came out of the woodwork for the D&D related ones because that's like my level of fandom, and that is my that's my sweet spot right there. You brought Magic and D&D together in a way that did not suck. I love it. You're my heroes. But alas, in the years since, Hasbro and WOTC accordingly have lost a lot of my confidence. I was a lot more positive than you back at the beginning in the year. You know, mm-hmm. I began this with great hopes that they would pull out of the tailspin, and I have not seen any signs of that. And 1,100 creatives later.
Yeah, including the people that worked with the Larian Studios and also with the Magic the Gathering.
These are the people who were the physical architects of the successes that this company has had.
And they're laying those people off because Hasbro's hemorrhaging money. And Wizards of the Coast can't staunch the bleeding forever, no matter how many times you do it. So this was another crass attempt to prop up their sales and profitability reports at the end of the year by eliminating staff so that it artificially inflates their stock prices. And yes, we realize that they have a duty and responsibility to their stockholders and shareholders to bring them profit. But however, this is always crass. And this is the point I want to land on here, is that it's time to stop normalizing these year-of-end layoffs that are some type of weird sacrificial ritual to the shareholders and board of directors, because everybody else does it. Look, Games Workshop, which is a much more predatory animal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
look. The markup on their price, some of their figures is over 2,000% according to the, you know, the 30 cents per shot that they spend.
Yeah.
You know, when you're charging $70 for a sprue of plastic, then most of it you're going to discard. Look, they gave their employees a year-end bonus for the last 3 years, as I understand it. This year was their highest earnings ever, and they gave a £2,500 sterling bonus to all their associates and staff.
Dude, I'm not certain, but I think that's what, somewhere near $3,000 or no, $3,200 or something like that.
Yeah,
that's a heck of a New Year's bonus, man. Good for.
And they didn't lay anybody off. So if Games Workshops can do it, I'm pretty sure somewhere Hasbro can find it in their hearts, cold, hard hearts. No, they can't. Look.
Yeah, maybe not doling out $2 million in bonuses to Mr. Cox, like in the middle of the year, despite one of the most epically poor performances in leadership history in the entirety of corporate history. I mean, the guy who has been leading the van, you know, like I am riding in the van, leading us into the jaws of total failure and stupidity. That guy was worth $2 million in bonuses? That is not great stewardship, folks. And I see why your company is in trouble, because you really know how to throw money at the wrong stuff.
And look, Mike's exactly right. We stopped gamers of all types, grogbeards, LARPers, cosplayers, new blood, all came together as one and told Hasbro WotC to stop. And they did. They stopped with the OGL. They said, fine, we're giving it to Creative Commons. And yeah, we're not completely trustworthy on that, and long live the orc. But on the flip side of that, we made them stop. We have an opportunity here to basically yell at Hasbro and Wizards that, look, why do you lay off your best people every time at the end of year just to pad your corporate profits? Yeah, the rest of the companies do. But this is a forward-facing issue that you have direct control over. Can you do better? And that's all we're asking here. Just do better.
And here, from a moment of corporate philosophy examination, just one thoughtful thing. I understand that in this era, you know, we now have more of a gig-based economy, and the contract employee, the subcontract employee, and things like that are normative in the businesses of entertainment and creative fields and endeavors. However, if your stated goals are to have this kind of narrative flow that leads you to a properly monetized product, you have to have that level of coordination. Okay, the product lines have to be intersecting. There has to be communications between people who know each other and know what they're all about. You cannot just start off every like 18 months with a brand new crew of people that you hired as temps. It does not work that way. Okay.
Knife hand.
It has not worked that way for anyone else, and it will not work that way for Hasbro or WOTC. So once that Band-Aid has been ripped off, then maybe they could start making decisions that don't suck. I'm not bleeding hearting about it. Like, oh, you know, all of these people deserve their jobs back. Hey, look, if you really had some extraneous personnel, I would understand why they would have to go. That is the nature of the corporate beast. But in this case, like even a cursory examination of the talent that was removed is devastating.
Yeah, like this how is foolish a massive is it to loss. Lay off those who were making the company more profitable?
Yeah,
who were involved in the successes that were Baldur's Gate 3, and I'll even say part of the D&D movie. It's just dumb and greedy and very selfish looking. It's a bad look all the way around, just to increase profitability short term. Because all of these cuts are not anything that adds actual value. They're literally a phantasmal force.
Yeah.
They're an illusion. Make your will saves. Yeah.
This is to staunch the appearing, you know, like the really visible hemorrhage of cash that they experienced like that. This is a move that will, like, for a very, very short period of time, make it look like they're not as bloodied and beaten. With only Magic the Gathering showing the kind of profits that they really need and depend on.
Yeah, D&D could have been a contender, but yeah, they decided not to. They had a lot of investiture in with the movie and the video game coming up that they could have moved this forward. And would they still done an addition to get D&D Beyond? Yes, I think they would have. They're that stubborn and thick-necked about it. They're going to continue with this. And
yeah,
they're even now not even sure how they're going to put the new D&D edition out or what they're going to even call it. But we're getting it. So, you know, would like it or not, here it comes. So, yeah, long live things like Tales of the Valiant, which is the 5e Pathfinder, you know, where it's its own kind of adjacent 5e system. And moving forward with that, you know, you could do that and never give Wizards another dime. But I also say that, hey, look, whatever you play, enjoy it. But I want to put this last fine point on this, and then we'll wrap it up, is that the summation of the TTRPG marketplace was made because role-playing games are different than video games. They allow a lot of individualization, creativity, and that is its core feature that is being looked at by investors and by real deep thinking financial wizards. And they understand that that is what the TTRPG appeal is. That's what gives it worth and value. And Wizards is starting to take that away, or Hasbro's, I'm sorry. Stumbling over all the names, forgive me. Hasbro's trying to take that away in an effort to monetize it, and they're failing. And they're going to continue to fail forward like this until they figure it out. And that's what we're trying to say, is that, you know, they could have had that year-end bonus that Games Workshop enjoyed had they done things a little differently. And it's not that hard. We're two schmoes sitting here.
I know that at their level, like at the level of the game that they are playing, we all down here, we all look like dumb little ants, okay? Where you look down from the top of the Empire State Building, and there are all the little dots moving around, and like some of them are cars and some of them are people. Yeah, we're all dumb little ants from that distance way up in the sky. But you can't actually see from that distance what the heck it is we're really doing. I mean, you have some vague idea of us moving back and forth, but you're not really getting the big picture. You don't know what we're up to or why we do the things we do. RPGs, TTRPGs in particular, are about a sense of community and friendships that form and experiences that are shared and laughter that is had. You can have some of that online. It is absolutely possible, and I believe in that. But the personal nature of the experience still trumps internet. It is still visceral. Or
a video game. Yeah.
Yeah, it is visceral. It is something that is such a pleasure to sit around a table with a handful of people that you are growing to know and then wind up developing a friendship. And in many cases, lifetime friendships have been formed because of a little game. And that is a miraculous and wonderful thing. The exact nature and mechanics of that, the importance of that, they seem to have missed entirely. They do not get it. They think that this can be transformed into a purely transactional, pickup group, online, pay to play, buy your latest hot skins for the new weapon that you think will look cooler. By the time they're done crunching the numbers,
it's a complete transactional process.
That is empty and soulless.
That is itemized.
They're never going to make the kind of money that they imagined. However, the gamers of the world will still be out here. We're not going to quit gaming. We will find a way to rattle some dice.
Right. This is not
can happen with them receiving some of our money, or it can happen with them getting none of our money. That's up to them. So, hey, power's all yours, babe.
Right. And that's the power we have. And that's
what power of the babe.
Man, I guess.
Voodoo?
Voodoo.
Voodoo.
We did? We didn't mind out. It's all up to you. Yeah. So, yeah, as an aside here, it's all up to you what you want to play and how you want to do it. This is not a call for anybody to stop playing 5th edition. I mean, but I am saying that, hey, there's some nice 5th edition adjacent independent publishers out there coming up. So be on the lookout for those.
Yeah, enjoy.
And if that teaches Hasbro's leadership that they kind of messed up, well, so be it. But anyway, that's going to do it for us. Hey, it's the holiday season. We hope you have a great one. Happy holidays, all that.
Oh, yeah. All of the above. Enjoy every holiday that is beloved to you. Be with your loved ones.
That's right. So we're going to call it in here and cash out. So until next time,
may the dice always roll in your favor. We're out.
See ya.